Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. We got an awesome Sunday in front of us. Happy post 4th of July. How we need to jump into this thing. But welcome to the Sunday morning brunch, man. We got a lot of interesting stuff to jump into. I mean, I'm going from Gold Cup to MLB. Still got the free agency frenzy to jump into. And a little bit of unfortunate NFL. I got an interesting dish to set this show off right. But I took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. It's a Sports City chance with Sunday the brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.
And, yes, that is for the 4th of July for everybody that had to enjoy their, you know, fireworks celebration and celebration of the birthday of America, if you will. The call-in number is 917-889-9592. So you got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And like I said, I got a lot of interesting stuff to jump into. Some unfortunate news right now, Sports City, because I'm getting this news first and foremost, and this is more or less a breaking news situation that I'm breaking before Mr. Hughes gets in the building. So I'm going to get these guys in here and see how everybody's feeling on this holiday weekend. Calling in by way of the state of South Carolina, the Brooklyn Knight himself, Mr. Nostradamus, a.k.a. Mr. Knight. Chandler, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm fine. It's the Women's World Cup, not the Gold Cup. Okay, if we're going to talk about it, let's get it right. It's the Women's World Cup gold medal game.
Did I say men's? Okay, if I said men's, I apologize. I know it's the Women's Gold Cup.
You said Gold Cup. It's the Women's World Cup.
Okay. Let me get it, and I have it written right. I got it written right in the description. I said it wrong, so apologize. I apologize. If you're reading along with what I'm saying, I'm thinking one and I'm saying it another. You know, like I said, I got an interesting dish that I'm sitting on, and I can't wait to get out to Sports City. I'm feeling some type of way. Okay. Next but not least, we got breaking news. Brian Hughes in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, fellas. What's going on? Another beautiful day. Ready to talk some sports.
A little shaky. Go get your coffee. I'll get you up. And especially with the breaking news situation I have here in the kitchen, Sports City is going to wake us up. I know everybody's going to get up, at least on the topic that I have. And calling in another chef into the building, we have Nacho at the brunch. Nacho, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Good morning. Feeling good. Bright and early up and at 'em on the West Coast.
Okay. So I have a little NFL to jump into. Well, I have a decent amount of NFL. I'm not going to lie. I think I kind of want to save my breaking news dish as we, you know, go along, because I it's like a surprise to me, and I'm not going to lie that it is actually very, very close to us here at Sports City, at least two of the breaking news situations. So people buckle up. Now, first and foremost, I'm feeling some type of way. I'm going to start the show off right. NFL. I'm going to give y'all some NFL. Start your brunch off good. I want to start this one up. I'm feeling some type of way because I actually like this player. I'm going to save the breaking news situation down the road in this show because nobody has this but Sports City. Nobody. Not even that network that everybody likes to turn to get all of their information. They don't have what I got right now. So this is big. First and foremost, Antonio Gates, tight end from the San Diego Chargers, is on a four-game suspension of abusing substance substance abuse policy throughout the NFL, and he's out for the first four games of the season. Now, I want to know how people feel about this. It's a PED use, for Antonio Gates. And I want to know how people feel about this with Antonio Gates, that now at the age of 35 in his career, that this is something that, tramples into his career, and knowing how he's have a, a regular situation of not being on the field or being out there for the Chargers as much as he possibly wanted to. I don't know if this was the situation for him to try and get an edge out there, but I want to see how you guys feel about it. Now, I'm not going to lie. I am a Gates fan. I'm not a Chargers fan. A lot of people around Fort City know I support and love what Philip Rivers does on the field, and one of his biggest or primary targets is Antonio Gates. And I want to see how Rivers can actually try and man the ship without one of his better targets being Antonio Gates. So I want to see how you guys feel about this. This is big-time news, at least for the San Diego Chargers as of this moment. Brian, I'll start with you because you are in California right by the situation. Your thoughts on Antonio Gates?
Well, Ty, we actually talked about this a little bit, and, I actually just find this whole situation really sad. I don't know what it is with older players that maybe are just past their prime and the feeling of, I took something that, I probably shouldn't have and I didn't realize I did it and this and that. He never did that the first 10 years of his career. Robert Mathis never did that the first 8-10 years of their career, but all of a sudden now is when they're having a problem, when they're getting older and getting slower. I just think it goes to show the competitive balance in football, Only the strong survive, the bigger, faster continue to do well, and Gates has really performed probably better than he should have. I mean, when you think of age and factor everything in over the course of the last year, and he's trying to keep, in my opinion, he's trying to keep that same level of play, and that's what competitors do. They have a young tight end there in Virgil Green, who's uber athletic, that played pretty well last year. And it's sad, but at the same time, it just seems like, especially with the NFL players, that they lack the ability to just kind of go out with grace. I mean, you look at the Brett Favre situation. I mean, I read something in the news the other day that says he still thinks he could come back and probably be, one of the 15 best quarterbacks in the league, at 49. And it just goes to show you, you're talking about a very violent sport, a very violent game that's ultra-competitive. If you are not an ultra-competitor, football is not the sport for you. Take up badminton, take up hockey, or not hockey, excuse me. Take up badminton, take up golf, take up tennis, something like that, because you are going to be put through the ringer, and probably just about every day you're going to be thinking to yourself, is this worth it?
Okay, let's throw this one around the kitchen and see how everybody feels. Chandler, I'll let you get on this one. Your thoughts on Antonio Gates and why so late in his career that this comes up as a black eye towards Gates, especially with all of the questions that loom around him and his durability, if he could be out there on the field for a full season. Is this something that he was looking to try and get an edge? Or, your thoughts here in the kitchen.
Probably, but so he misses four games healthy instead of missing four games injured. I don't see a difference. I've never been a big Gates guy. So I'm not trying to hear that all of a sudden he just did it. Listen, for whatever reason, football gets away with letting their guys use performance-enhancing drugs. They do. No one cares. Antonio Gates got suspended, so what? People are still talking about him being in the Hall of Fame. He's probably been cheating his whole career, and he's still going to cheat because that's what football players do. The only thing, this is actually a benefit to the Chargers, if anything, because now they don't have to worry about him being injured for four games. He can stay healthy and rest his body, and maybe he'll actually be able to play, 10 to 12 games this year, because that's about what he's been playing anyway, 10 to 12 games. So what's really the difference on the field for them? I don't really see how it impacts anything other than people talking about him for about a week And by next week, they'll have forgotten about it.
Yeah, but I think with him being out there on the field and knowing that they have a running back in Gordon, I mean, they do have pieces that they could fly off on all cylinders if they were together. But now I think at the start of the season, depending on if he appeals this or not, they will kind of be, you know, imbalanced, if you will, trying to fit him into the chemistry of what they're trying to do offensively. But like I said, I think this is a big situation with this looming around Gates right now at the end of his career, too. Well, not, I don't really want to say the end of his career, but past his glory days of his career. I don't want to act like I'm, you know, putting a stamp on him, you know, the sand in his hourglass running out. Nasa, your thoughts on this situation? I know that you're near the San Diego area also. Being in Arizona, your thoughts on Gates? Does it stunt the growth of the Chargers going into the 2015-16 season? Your thoughts?
I don't think it stunts the growth of the team at all, but I do believe it just takes away from the red zone threat. Whether you know, like the guy or not, he always has been and will be a red zone threat for that team. Him and Phillip Rivers, they connect. So that's the only thing I think they'll be missing. As it pertains to the team, I think they'll be okay. Like Chandler alluded to, he misses 4 or 5 games a year on average just because of injury. So now he gets to, you know, rest up and like Chandler said, hopefully he gets to play those 10, 12 straight games. Maybe they can do something. But I think the only thing you'll really see is them have to go to someone else in the red zone, maybe run the ball a little more. But I don't see anything else as it pertains to the team and their growth or stunning their growth or it taking away from wins or giving them losses. I just think they'll be you'll just see it in the red zone. There'll be different options. They'll be more spread out. They might be more spread out. We'll just have to see how they adjust to that. Other than that, I think they'll be okay.
Now, I actually think he's more of a tight end that they use in between, you know, the 20s, you know, from the 20-yard line to the other 20-yard line. In the red zone, I mean, they use him as a target, and he's always an option. But I think this actually hurts them if they're trying to take chunks out of the field. He is one of those difference makers up against a lot of those secondaries that have to choose if they're gonna stick with Gates or, you know, go over the top and help on the wide receiver coverage. This is big because now they basically gonna wave their hands at the tight end production. But not to say that the tight end production won't be there. Not like Rivers won't go there and make a couple of completions. But it's different without a guy like Gates who is a Pro Bowl perennial tight end for the game. So moving forward, I just want to see how this all progresses, but this is a big situation, at least for the Chargers, one of the faces of the organization getting caught up in this ordeal. Now, here goes another name that we also know so well, being Rolando McClain again in the news or the media, however you may look at it, but Rolando McClain is out. Now, he has a substance abuse situation. Now, that's how I had it confused with the PED and substance abuse, but he's facing a 4-game ban. Now, this is a situation where it's like, not again, that your name is not only in a situation, but you're going to miss game, you're going to miss time on the Dallas Cowboys, no less, at the linebacker position. And knowing that they're trying to get Sean Lee back, working back in the game shape after, you know, tearing his knee up, this is an unfortunate situation for Dallas Cowboy defense, who was trying to make their way out of last season and trying to build off it going into this season. Chandler, I know we spent a ton of shows and time talking about Rolando McClain. Your thoughts on his name popping up to the media surface once again on a 4-game ban?
Not surprised. We said that going into the offseason about him, that you know what, he had a good year, somebody gave him a shot, he had a good season, the Cowboys did well, and I remember mentioning him specifically and saying, is he going to screw this up?
Yeah.
I remember talking about him. So, it is what it is. Listen, when these cats get suspended for 4 games, and you're going to bring up Sheldon Richardson too, same thing with him. Okay, this isn't the first time they got caught. See, they put it out there and act like, see, with him, it's, oh, a repeat offender. Well, guess what? Sheldon Richardson is a repeat offender, too, because he got suspended 4 games. That means he was already in the program. It means he got in court before. So, you know what? When they relax those rules regarding the levels of marijuana that they could suspend guys for. I said then that it was a mistake because all they were doing was giving guys the opportunity to smoke more. And all they told, no. Listen, if you lower the testing for drugs, people are going to do more drugs. It's really that simple. Oh, I can do more drugs now because they lowered the they made it harder for me to get suspended, so I could do even more. That's the thought process. So guess what, NFL? You got exactly what you asked for. You're going to get more guys suspended for drugs because you lowered the testing for drugs and made it harder for guys to get suspended, which means guys are going to do more drugs.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on this situation with Rolando McClain? I mean, this name has been basically one of the names picked on in the NFL since he came out of college, out of Alabama. Your thoughts on how he can't stay out of his own way. Like, literally, almost every season, there's something going on with him. And knowing Dallas is trying to stay out of the news' way or the media's way, here goes another situation that they're going into, you know, training camp and preseason, worried about their defensive issue.
You know, the thing is you know, as expected, Rolando McClain, like Chandler said and alluded to, when you make the laws or the rules easier to break or to bend, it's just, you know, it's harder to get in trouble. Things are going to get overhand, out of hand really quickly. The thing is, with the Dallas Cowboys, they were prepared for this. So, you know, he's had a 1-year contract. I believe it's very, very incentive. I think there's a lot of incentives in it. So it's just for the team in and of itself, they were expecting him. You know, they wanted him to do well. That's why there was a lot of incentives in it. If he did well, he'd get paid. If this were to happen, you know, not a big hit to the team. They do have the kid from the Minnesota Vikings, Brinkley. They got Brinkley from the Vikings. They signed him up. So that they were prepared for this. So Dallas is not really in, like, the best, like the worst position as it pertains to their team and their defense going around, you know, Sean Lee going down and things like that. Hopefully him coming back healthy and everything else going along with that, they'll be better off on the field. As it pertains to, you know, the image of the Dallas Cowboys, this is something they've obviously been trying to get away from for too long now. Teammates, teams, players doing things, getting themselves in trouble, you know, drunk driving, killing teammates, doing drugs, throwing fits, having to be watched 24/7, things like that. Those aren't things teams want to be associated with, no matter who you are, and the Cowboys just can't seem to get away with it. They take a lot of chances on a lot of guys because no one else will. They do things like this where they give them incentive-related contracts or how, whatever have you. You know, and if it works out, great, but 8 times out of 10, it hasn't worked out. So the Cowboys need to just start paying some good money to some good players and stop taking chances on these players just because they showed some light or some talent at one point. But you got to realize that a bad egg is a bad egg. You know, you can't reverse rotting. So you got to keep moving on. But Dallas is just, like I said, Dallas on the field might not see a big hit. They might not see a big drop in production on the field, but, you know, their image is just getting worse and worse as time goes on because they keep taking on these players who they believe they can turn around. And like I said, 8 times out of 10, they just can't do it, and it ends up giving them another black eye.
Okay, Brian, I know this is a guy that we spoke on, and especially while he was out there in the Bay, somebody that you covered also. How can McClain stay out of his way? What does this spell for Dallas going into this situation of a questionable defense, to say the least, especially with the issues that they're trying to patch up right now? Your thoughts on Rolando McClain and everything that follows behind him?
Well, you know, all I'll say, Ty, is, you know, I mean, these guys have already touched on it, but you know, I mean, he's shown a propensity for making bad decisions, you know. I think that, you know, when you think of Nick Saban and his staff at Alabama, they must have been aware of some of his limitations and probably, you know, probably had a lot firmer grip on him than any of us even realized at the time, because you never heard a peep or a word while he was at Alabama. And it's not that he's a bad player. He played pretty well last year for the Dallas Cowboys, but some guys just have a hard time staying out of their own way. And, you know, like I said, everybody's looking for a competitive edge, whether it's a competitive edge in recovery, whether it's a competitive edge in strength, you know. And when you're 25, 24, that competitive edge should come from, you know, probably the gym or working out or putting in the work. You know, not that it justifies or excuses, but, you know, you can almost understand a guy like Antonio Gates or Robert Mathis that have played their entire career clean. You've never had any kind of transgressions, and at the end of their career when they're getting old, this kind of stuff happens. And it doesn't make it any less egregious, but it's more understandable. You understand what the thought process is. I just think that, you know, for Rolando McClain, he finally started to get his career back on track. Things didn't work in Oakland. He finally started to get his career back on track and with Dallas and now this. You know, some of these guys, they need not a coach, they need a mentor. And, you know, unfortunately, you look at a team like the Baltimore Ravens from a few years ago, there's not a lot. When you look at the amount of turnover every single year, you don't have a lot of locker rooms that are set up like Baltimore had 2 or 3 years ago. And so we don't realize what a huge benefit it is to have a couple veteran guys in your locker room, consummate pros that are all pros that have done it right their entire career. And that's really what he needs. You know, if a DeMarcus Ware is there, if you have some of these guys, these defensive presence, you know, I'm not saying he changes everything, but he probably changes the culture, you know, a little bit. And these, you know, maybe these guys think twice about doing foolish things like this.
I'm sorry, what? Because that's just the most ridiculous thing I've just heard. The Seattle Seahawks entire secondary has been suspended for PEDs. There are veterans on that Dallas team. This is nonsense. Oh, and by the way, Antonio Gates, there's no way in hell he's been clean his entire career. You don't suddenly just start doing that, okay? You're either going to play clean your entire career or you're not. So can we start with the "oh, he needed a mentor" nonsense? That is nonsense. Okay, he's been doing it. This is his third team. Third. He stopped playing football because he wanted to get high.
Right, and he was also a first round pick, which means he had the potential to be a superstar. Once again,
then
like I said, he may be mentally not as tough. But physically, he's as talented or close to it as any linebacker in the league. But the mental toughness is where he's lacking. And as far as the mentor goes, I'm sorry, we'll agree to disagree. Because you know what? I've seen plenty of guys, plenty of quote-unquote knuckleheads, go to organizations like Baltimore. Perfect example, Haloti Ngata. Oh, he's not a hard worker. Oh, he's kind of a slacker. And you know what? You never had a problem. Because when you have guys in your organization like an Ed Reed, like a Ray Lewis, you know what? They're not going to allow you to slack off. They're going to expect the best from you. They're going to expect to win when they step on the field. And when you have expectations like that as a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid from Hall of Famers or future greats, you know what? You may listen a little bit. But when everybody on your roster is 24 or younger and can't grow a full beard, I'm sorry, I disagree. I do think that makes a difference. I do think it makes a difference that, you know what? Most people probably couldn't name 3 players on the Dallas defense last year. And I'm not saying
he's 19. He's not 20. He's a grown-ass man now, okay? He's making choices on his own. Oh, and by the way, Haloti Ngata wasn't getting high all the time when he got to the Ravens. Okay? We talking guys like Rolando McClain who want to consistently keep doing drugs when they know what the consequences are. Okay, it's not an addiction for him. It's a choice. There's a difference between him and somebody that has an addiction. He's just an idiot because you know what, he thinks he can beat the system. That got nothing to do with mentoring. That's got to do with making choices and not wanting to grow the hell up.
All hey, you know what? That's one thing that we agree on. I do think that he's an idiot.
I'll let you finish. All the mentoring in the world, once you hit a certain age, ain't going to do a damn thing for you if you continue to make the same choices. He's at a point now where it ain't about mentoring. It's about him making choices and making decisions and growing up on his own. At a certain point, there's nobody there but you. You got to grow up. He doesn't want to, so therefore he gets what he gets. I'm not excusing him. I'm not, it was Nick Saban. That's all nonsense because he's at a point now. It's too late for all of that. It's too late for all. It's like once you turn 18, you're grown now. You ain't 17. You're not a kid anymore. You're grown now. Rolando McClain is old enough to know better. He chooses not to.
Okay. And that's your opinion, once again, because I'm sorry, I don't believe, you know, when you're 17, you're allowed to be immature and all of a sudden we sprinkle fairy dust on you, and at 18 you're a grown man and all of a sudden you're going to make great decisions and you're going to become a professional and you're going to be a leader and you're no longer going to make any immature or childish mistakes. I mean, let's not forget that guys like Brett Favre in their 40s, who's considered a remarkable leader, was sending pictures of his penis to a girl that works in the organization. Now, I'm not comparing that to drugs, but the point is, you can't tell me that when you hit 18, all of a sudden it's all better. I mean, let's be honest. You know what? We all struggle with making some immature decisions at time, and what I'm saying is he clearly does not have the right cast of characters around him. And I'm not saying just in his friendship circle. I'm saying, you know what, there's obviously not somebody there that helps him to make sure that he's doing the right thing. And I'll be the first to tell you, at 19, 18, I was still making some really, really poor decisions. The light didn't just absolutely just switch on, but you know what? Now I'm in my mid to late 30s, you know what? I don't make those same mistakes. And you know what the difference is? When he's in his late 30s, he ain't going to be playing football no more. And you know what? There's a good chance that he may not be playing football when he's 30, Chandler. I'm not saying your premise is wrong. What I'm saying is the logic that, you know what, all of a sudden when you go from 17 to 18, that things are just going to miraculously change, it doesn't happen for most people like that.
Rolando McClain isn't 19. Well, by the way, Brett Favre was – I never considered Brett Favre a great leader. I don't know who the people that did, but they're obviously idiots. But Rolando McClain is in his mid-20s. He's 24, 25. He is not 19, 18. So your premise is flawed because at this stage of his life, he should be making his own decisions. You can't keep saying, well, nobody was there for me. Listen, I've been on my own since I was 12 years old. That's no longer an excuse for me to go out and do the things I did in my past, okay? I grew up without a father. I grew up in a home full of violence. Does that excuse anything I do now? No, it doesn't. Rolando McClain didn't have a mentor when he was 18, 19. Boo-hoo. What does that have to do with now?
I think you're missing the premise. The premise was based off what you said, which is when you go from 17 to 18, that you're a grown man now and you need to start making responsible choices, not what your childhood was, because whether you're white, black, green, yellow, purple, brown, whatever, whether you had a dad, whether you didn't have a dad, you know, regardless of your upbringing, there's good and bad people from every walk of life, and I think we can all agree on that. There's people who make good and bad choices from every walk of life. Once again, what I'm saying is that I'm not denying what you're saying, Chandler. I'm not saying that let's give him a pass. What I'm saying is clearly he has not had the right type of mentorship to get him on the straight and narrow. He hasn't had the right type of people around him that are going to keep him accountable for his actions. I'm not saying, look, he's 25, you know, we should coddle him, we should baby him. I'm saying clearly he has not had the right type of people around him that are going to challenge him to make better decisions.
And when is his responsibility to challenge himself at 25 years old?
I agree with you. That's what I just said. He's obviously immature. At 25 years old, you should absolutely be challenging yourself every day to make better decisions. But he clearly does not, as you've indicated. You know, this isn't his first offense. This isn't his second offense. Clearly, talent-wise, he has all the talent in the world, but mentally, he's a knucklehead.
Okay, great, great. Especially with Rolando McClain. Now, it's going to only get hotter in the kitchen, but it's an unfortunate situation that I'm going to jump into. First and foremost, before I get to the meat and potatoes and everything that I'm going to spill out, two guests here in the Sports City Chef Kitchen. That's right. We had big interviews. Check it out if you didn't hear it on sportscitychef.com. Both of the individuals that I'm about to cover, both in interesting situations. Now, first and foremost, I want to get to the lighter side of one of them because I feel like this is the lighter side, but it's an unfortunate situation. Bad timing. Somebody that I'm actually still close with, still keep in touch with, talk to on a regular basis after we had the interview here. Cornerback Josh Robinson of the Minnesota Vikings has a partially torn pectoral muscle, and they're saying the season is in jeopardy, that he may be out for the season for the Minnesota Vikings. Now, knowing him at the cornerback position, he actually is one of the faster corners in the league, building his name up pretty decent for himself in the NFC North here. I want to see how you guys feel about this one. But the bigger one of the news here at Sports City, that another guy that I still speak to on a regular basis after the interview, and this one actually hurts the most, like out of both of them, and I feel like this is the meat and potato situation of how I wanted to approach this, and I'm a little heavy-hearted by this one, but I want to make sure everything is clear. But I have a source in the Florida region that was basically in the same area as Jason Pierre-Paul, a guest here at the Sports City Chef's Kitchen. We had an interview with him back in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, where he actually quoted that they would go to the Super Bowl and win it, and they got it done. They are waiting till everything comes back, but Jason Pierre-Paul's career can be over. It is in jeopardy. What happened yesterday, they are trying to still find out more word and information on it. You're only getting his first here in Sports City, but he has a significant hand injury that may require him ending his career. This is how bad it has happened. So I want to see how you guys feel about this. Jason Pierre-Paul's career in jeopardy. I'm hoping that is not. I don't even want to say it like that. That's why I want to wait till we get full word on the situation. And Josh Robinson, a cornerback out of the NFC North, potentially can miss the season with a torn pectoral muscle. Nacho, I'll start with you first, and I'll dish it to the chefs behind you also. Your thoughts on Josh Robinson and Jason Pierre-Paul, both with significant situations at the same time here at the brunch.
You know, as it pertains to the Minnesota Vikings, obviously that just hurts their secondary in a division where you've got Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, what we could see a reemergence of, you know, Jay Cutler having to throw the ball up, and he's got Alshon Jeffery and Kevin White. So you've got a few wide receivers in that division that you have to look out for, and you need all the help you can get at the secondary. So for Minnesota to lose someone, a speedy guy who can cover like that, it is going to be hard for them to stop anyone in their own division. So it's going to be tough for Minnesota. As it pertains to JPP and those Giants, if they lose him, if he's gone for the season, possibly his career, that's heartbreaking. A hand injury, I don't know exactly what what could be wrong with the hand that you wouldn't be able to play anymore. But that's just, you know, man, they put a lot of onus on him for that defense. They haven't put too much around him, hoping he could be the guy. So if he's gone, that just hurts them entirely. That hurts that entire defense. So both these teams, you know, not names that really pop out at you, not names that really, you know, when you hear them, they make your eyes pop out. But both these teams will take a big hit. Both these teams will lose games because these players might not be on the field for a significant amount of time.
Okay, now let me open this one up to the guys around the kitchen. I'll come to you next. Brian, your thoughts on the situation around Josh Robinson and JPP. I'm waiting to get more word back on the JPP situation because what I've been quoted is that they want to take extent to go real significant. I don't even want to say it, man, because it's close to me. I really want to see him out of this situation with JPP, but it's a very sad situation where he might lose the limb. That's how bad the situation happened. And with Josh Robinson being out potentially for the season for the Minnesota Vikings, knowing that they picked up Newman and Captain Munderland as well, your thoughts on the Vikings having to get ready so fast with missing one of their corners in this NFL season?
Well, also with Josh Robinson, I agree with you. You know what? Super nice guy. You know, we had the conversation. I also kept in contact with him on Twitter. And he's just a really good guy, and you feel for him. He cracked the starting lineup, and you know, by all accounts, he was actually probably the more solid of the two starting corners when you compared him to Xavier Rhodes, who was a first-round pick from a couple of years back. But your heart goes out for a guy like that that, you know, had maybe the longer road, that didn't come right into the league and start immediately and playing well. But, you know, as you mentioned, we're not talking about an extremity being, you know, needing to be removed or life-altering or career-ending. And injuries do happen. So, Josh, keep your head up if you're listening. And, you know, keep fighting a good fight, man. You've done a great job there in Minnesota. As far as Jason Pierre-Paul, you know, I feel really bad for this guy because at one point, you know, back in 2011, 2012, when the interview happened, I mean, you could have made the argument that he was one of the most dominant defensive players in the league. He very tenacious pass rusher, and you know, you look at the pieces that have went away, you know, Matthias Kiwanuka, Justin Tuck, you know, Antonio Pierce. The front seven, it became a lot weaker, and his production has fallen with it. And I just think that if for some reason, you know, obviously we hope, you know, that, as you mentioned, we hope that there's no issues with the extremity and that he can keep his arm or hand. But people will fail to realize 20, 30, 40 years from now just what a dominant pass rusher he was for a short period of time, because I don't think he has enough production to be considered a Hall of Famer. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that he's quite done enough to be put in that category, but he truly was probably the best pass rusher or one of the best pass rushers in the league for about a 2 or 3 year stint. So, you know, as you mentioned, with heavy hearts, you know, I'd definitely be praying for him, and I hope he's okay. You know, football's a game, but, you know, these youngsters, they still have a long, long life ahead of them, and I hope everything works out, and I hope he remains healthy.
Right, and I'm hoping to get word that he can still go out there and play, but from what I'm hearing, they're saying that it is very bad. So I want to hear more from it, but you're getting this first from Sports City. You guys aren't getting this from any other network, but I want to hear more about this, and hopefully my source nailed this. But it's unfortunate with Jason Pierre-Paul and Josh. But Chandler, your thoughts on Josh Robinson and him having a torn pectoral muscle and potentially missing the entire 2015-16 season, And Jason Pierre-Paul, waiting to hear more word back on this, but if all pans in, he may be missing the remainder of his NFL career. And I do understand where Brian's coming from. It is just a game. Even though you want to see him out there playing, I'm not even a Giant fan, but, you know, building a liking for the guy and knowing him personally, very cool guy, man. I mean, I can say a ton of things about him, but your thoughts on both Josh Robinson and Jason Pierre-Paul?
Well, both of them are guys that we don't hear enough about. We keep hearing about idiots like Rolando McClain and not enough about these guys. These are the guys that we should be hearing about. For Minnesota on the football field, pec muscle, depending on how it heals and things of that nature, he may be able to come back sooner. He might not be a full season. Some in the special position he plays, so I'm gonna just keep thinking that he'll be back. It won't be a full season. He'll be back sooner rather than later. It obviously impacts Minnesota with all the quarterbacks not to mention outside of Jay Cutler, because Jay Cutler's a bum. And, you know, he threw me in an interception. But anyway. But for Minnesota and for Robinson, it's a setback. But you know, in some ways, it may be a blessing for him because it'll also show them how important he is in that defense, which may help him down the road in negotiations. I mean, after all, this is a business, and guys got to get their money. So in some ways, maybe a blessing for him. It allows him maybe to take another look at the game from a different perspective. Maybe there's some things he still needs to get better at, and he'll find those things while he's sitting there looking, you know, at a different angle, so to speak. So, again, for him, for Minnesota, it's a setback for him. It is, but you know, fortunately, it is just that it's a minor bump in the road. For Pierre-Paul, I don't speculate on things, but based on what you said, there's a word that popped into my head when you said could lose the limb, especially with the weekend that just passed. I really hope that's not what it was, and you know what I'm thinking
what
right
it was.
Now.
That's what it was.
Unbelievable.
That's why they want to totally spill the whole situation out till I get full information on it. But that's exactly what happened, and it's crucial that you hit on it right there too. But that's what happened to Jason Pierre-Paul.
If that is what it was, there's going to be so many levels to this. Well, the Giants are a class organization, so I don't think they would do what some organizations would do, try to go after money and things of that nature. Whether he gets back on the football field, to me, really is irrelevant at this point. Hopefully he just gets better and gets healthy. If he winds up back on the football field, great. If he doesn't, hopefully, you know, he just continues on and is able to live a good life. I know a lot of cats that have, you know, for me, I know a lot of cats that have some missing appendages. It's not the end of the world. When you're young, it seems like it, but it's really not. But overall, you know what, I'm going to reserve the comments until we see what it is, because this is kind of why I stayed in the house yesterday and didn't go outside, because there's just too much that happens around this specific time of the year. I just hope that it's not as bad as first thought, and I'll just leave it at that.
Right, and that's what I'm hoping for, because honestly, just like Brian said, at one point he was one of the better ends in the league, and I'm hoping that he can still get out there and ball, but until all of his health situation is clear, like that's first and foremost, his health, his body, making sure that he's able to go out there and be himself again is first and foremost, and then if he can actually help contribute to the New York Giants, but he's going out there and played with injuries, to his arms before, but nothing to this severity. So, Jason, you already know how we get down. I'm saying this, you know, personally and as a chef of Sports City, you know how we get down, man. I'm praying for you, man. I want to see you out there, even though my people out here, and I'm saying this too, Jason, just to kind of get under your skin. I can't stand the Giants. I can't stand the Giants at all because I live out here in this area, but you know, build the relationships with people and knowing the guy personally, man, it's tough, man. I didn't want to start the show off like that, but I felt like I needed to build the base toward it while we had an interesting amount of NFL topics. And Josh as well, too, somebody I keep in touch with. And me and Josh go back and forth. He talk about, oh, we got your boy today. Watch out for your Lions, this, that, and the third. And I'm like, we're going to deal with the Vikings, so on and so forth. Like, so I got a good report. Like, we trash talk because he knows my love for the team of the Detroit Lions, man, and get healthy, just like Chandler said, knowing that it's an injury that could potentially be shorter than a full season. That's why they're saying that the season is in doubt. So I do want to see the timeline of how long he is going to be out. But just like Nacho hit on, there is a ton of receivers that he's going to have to defend in the NFC North. So is it worth him rushing himself back? Because this is similar to what Chandler alluded to. A lot of these teams want to get their talent out there sooner than later so they can provide help for the team, so on and so forth, if they can make an interesting push at a postseason push, so what have you. So, Josh, knowing that your livelihood and your health and everything should come first, I think you should follow the guidelines of what your therapist will come at you and say what you need to do and come back to see what the percentage numbers will be like before you can get out there on the field. But this is truly something that hits home, at least for me, for Sports City, because I was a part of both of those interviews, and I'm a part of both of these guys. You know, I don't know if I say social or personal, but I talk to both of these guys, you know, generally. So it's tough that on the same day, off of the holiday weekend, strong information like this comes to the kitchen. So, Josh, get well soon. And Jason, I'm praying for you, and I hope the best of the situation comes out. And you know, I just want to hear more about the story before I spill too much out to the kitchen. But that is what's going on football-wise. Okay, now, I do have a ton of interesting stuff. I got basketball and baseball for sure. The baseball situation that I had was Greinke and his streak of 27-plus straight scoreless innings. He's pitching like a monster for the Dodgers right now. And Strasburg is hurt again. Do the Nationals have to think about keeping Steven Strasburg or ending up moving this guy because he's been injury-prone like crazy? But that's the baseball topic that I want to save. I want to get to that. But that's something to stew in the kitchen. That's sitting in the pot on the stove. Now, the basketball situation, I cannot sit on this. I can't. I got to go at this. First and foremost, Greg Popovich, I'm going to get a little personal in this kitchen. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how the general management of the San Antonio Spurs always seems to make the right move. Now, they did end up losing Splitter, so that opens up one slot in the paint or in the front court, if you will, for the San Antonio Spurs. And two, to me, I'm going to get personal. This is a lot of personal stuff. This is like the bonehead move of the year for me. Marco Bellinelli signs a 3-year deal with the Kings, leaving the Spurs, but it's like, one, the Kings threw him $19 million, and two, why would you leave a Spurs team that actually is getting you to a Western Conference final, or at least a postseason appearance? But we see the Kings stacking up like crazy to make, you know, all of the moves so fast for this Kings team to be relevant again in the Western Conference. But ideally, as I say this, LaMarcus Aldridge is looking to sign with the San Antonio Spurs after all of this has gone on with the organization. Looking like this is going to be a 4-year deal, close to $80 million or around that area. One, I want to see how you guys feel about the situation with LaMarcus leaving Portland. Now, we talked about this off of the air. Me and several chefs that I've talked to, getting phone call after phone call, and it's like, you know, I feel like I'm conducting the show outside of the kitchen every time I'm talking to these guys. But it's heavy in thought. One, what the heck is going on in Portland? I don't know if it's management, if it's Terry Stott, or the worst part of this situation, if it's Damian Lillard, people, if it is Damian Lillard, I don't know what the heck is going on, but it's either Stott's general management or the point guard that is there by himself after this 2014-2015 season just ended. You mean to tell me that Wes Matthews is gone? Nicholas Batum is gone. LaMarcus Aldridge is now gone, and Robin Lopez is now gone. The only remainder of the starting five is the point guard. They are starting all anew in Oregon. So I want to see how you guys feel about that situation, Popovich, or the management, however they look at it, with getting LaMarcus to buy in, knowing that he would be a very interesting piece to Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, with those two careers are ending closely. Tony Parker getting up there in age also, but this is more or less a win-now situation for the San Antonio Spurs. I want to throw this one around the kitchen, see how you guys feel about this. Brian, I'll let you set this one off first. I know we talked about this off air. Your thoughts on LaMarcus Aldridge making the move, and also what the heck is going on in Portland, Oregon?
Well, I mean, you know, I think what it comes down to, Ty, is, you know, in the NBA, really, players want to win. I mean, you know, like we were talking about the other day, if 5-6 years ago you would have told me that an NBA free agent, regardless of who it was, if everything was equal money-wise, that an NBA player would choose Milwaukee over the New York Knicks and the Los Angeles Lakers, I would have said you were crazy. But with some of the changes that have been made with the NBA, you know, trying so desperately to curb the competitive balance, if you will, to make sure that everything is free or is fair and equal for the quote-unquote little guy, you see that, for the most part, players are signing with teams that they believe have a shot. You know, you've seen Greg Monroe sign with Milwaukee. A lot of people are saying, look, you know, they're probably the third or fourth best team in the East now. You see, you know, as you mentioned, you see Aldridge sign with the Spurs. And let me just be the first to say, even as a Lakers fan, I think that was his best fit. I think he made the right choice. He went home, number one. No taxes in the state of Texas, number two. Number three, he's with a unbelievable coach that you know is going to be there a while. You know, the reality is, when you look at the Suns and the Lakers, I mean, 3 years from now, he may be playing with a completely different team. I think he chose the right organization. If we're all just being honest with ourselves, take your fan bias out. So I give him kudos. You know, he's a great player. He's got some great young players that he knows are going to be there a while, and Kawhi Leonard, who's really come on strong, and like I said, and a great coach. But I just think the one thing I'll take away, Ty, as opposed to all the individual pieces, because, you know, every year free agency gets a little crazy, is how much competitive balance has shifted. You know, we always seen, you know, kind of survival of the fittest in NBA free agency. You know, team A would have a star, you know, like, for example, we'll say, you know, the Kings or, you know, the Pelicans or insert, you know, C-level team in here. And you would see the big teams, you know, your Chicago's, your Los Angeles, your New York, end up basically acquiring these players after their rookie deal is done. And it just doesn't seem like that's the case anymore. You know, it really seems like these bigger teams are going to have to realize that in this newer age of basketball, that drafting is going to be important. Because if I'm a free agent and I'm looking to join your team, I want to know what pieces are you going to be able to put around me. Not just, okay, hey, in 2 years, I'm going to pick up another good piece, because the reality is, at best, big teams have a 50-50 shot. It's no longer a 90-10 split with the little guys having to vastly overpay, or even at that, not even really having the cap to pay. The competitive balance really has been restored, which I personally don't like for obvious reasons, but I think it's good for the league, because you know what? A, you don't end up with all the stars in one spot, and B, it makes the entire landscape more competitive.
And also, I don't know if you're related to him. I'm kind of being funny about it, but one of the situations that was going on in Portland, his name is, well, he's an assistant coach named Kim Hughes. He was actually speaking on the Aldridge situation before it went down. He actually just got fired as of LaMarcus leaving Portland. So that could actually be the smoke if there's fire. You know what I'm saying? How they say where there's smoke, there's fire, or some situation. Well, he just got fired in the wake of LaMarcus leaving. So and knowing that teams are looking to win.
They told Uncle Kim that if he wasn't able to persuade LaMarcus to come back, that he was probably going to be canned. So we had a good idea that Uncle Kim was probably going to be gone.
Right. And unfortunately, that did not work, and Aldridge was looking for a way out, whether it was going to be in L.A. or Phoenix, or now where he's settling down at is back in his home state of Texas. Nacho, I want to throw this to you. Your thoughts on LaMarcus Aldridge landing with the Spurs, and your thoughts on where Portland goes now, knowing that they got, you know, guys like Mason Plumlee coming from the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, now that he gets to get away from the New York market and probably be himself, this was something I actually talked about with another chef outside the kitchen. Plumlee's going to have to show more than just athleticism out there. Myers Leonard is probably another building block that they're building off of, one of their big guys that's off the bench. But there's a lot of stuff going on with this Portland Trail Blazers organization. But LaMarcus Aldridge looking to be a Spurs soon.
You know, I don't know what to think about the Portland Trail Blazers. They pretty much are going to have an entirely one out of five from their starting five last year is going to be on the court next year. So it's just, to me, I'm at awe. I'm at shock. I don't think I've ever seen a team lose four-fifths of their starting lineup within a week and a half so quickly. I just don't know what they can put on the court that's going to equal the talent they already had up on the court last year. So I'm at a loss for words for what Portland's going through. For Aldridge, I think that was the best fit for him. I would have loved to have seen him, Tyson Chandler, what we got out here in Phoenix. I would have loved to have seen that go together. But obviously, with what he's got with Kawhi Leonard and then Tim Duncan for the next two, maybe 3 years, the way they play him, the way they utilize him over the season, they don't wear and tear him out. He plays very minimal. And then he plays for the postseason. I think that'll help them grow. It's going to be pretty interesting to see what the Spurs put on the court. Obviously, they instantly jump up into favorites in the West now. It's just going to be fun to watch them play. It would be interesting to watch a 1-8 Suns Spurs first round playoff. But that's far along down the line. But I think with the Spurs, that was the instant best pick for him. He fits right in right away. And with Greg Popovich, because Tom Thibodeau is no longer a coach in the NBA, there's only one elite coach, and that's Greg. So that's where you want to go.
Okay, Chandler, I know that this is something that we've been talking about to see where LaMarcus may end up going. I know the Spurs probably were a consideration, but knowing that he might have ended up staying in Portland or ending up going to the L.A. Lakers because they said that he went back to L.A. to make it happen. Your thoughts on this situation around LaMarcus Aldridge down there in San Antonio and then jump into what the heck is going on up in Portland, Oregon?
Well, there's a couple of things. Free agents haven't come to the New York Knicks that were in their prime for 4 years, so somebody not coming to New York is not something new. For Aldridge, it is the best fit. I don't understand what the Suns are doing right now, to be quite honest with you, with the Tyson Chandler signing. $52 million for Tyson Chandler is way too much. It would have made more sense to me to have one. Then once I saw they were going after Aldridge, it kind of made sense. But I personally would have tried to get Aldridge before I brought Tyson Chandler in there. Come on, it's San Antonio. I mean, if you're going to go to a franchise that you can pretty much guarantee that you're going to be in the playoffs and at least have a shot at the Western Conference Finals every single year, there's only one franchise in the Western Conference, the San Antonio. That fit what he wanted. That's going to fit where he is. And you know what? He doesn't have he has the pressure of filling in for Tim Duncan, but not really. Because most people overlook Tim Duncan anyway. So what real pressure is there going to be on him when Duncan retires and he has to fill that role? It is the perfect fit for him in every single way. I think he wanted to go to L.A., but I think at the end of the day, he didn't want the pressure in L.A. I think San Antonio fits his personality. It fits who he is. And when I say he didn't want the pressure, I don't mean that in a negative way. I just think San Antonio fits him. It fits him like a glove, so he went to the right place for him, not only for his career, but for his personal life as well. I think he did want to – everybody doesn't want to play at home I think he did. And I think San Antonio is kind of a perfect fit for who he is. He's an understated, reserved guy, and San Antonio fits him. And Popovich, what can you say about Popovich? Pop, don't go back to guys too many times. So Pop asked for a second meeting with you. That pretty much means he really wants you, and if Pop wants you, he's going to get you. So as far as him letting guys go, San Antonio has yet to let a guy go that's gone anywhere else and been successful. So when San Antonio lets someone go, think about it. There's a reason. Okay, think about all of the guys that San Antonio has let go over the years. How many of them have been successful anywhere else? Guys that we would say, why'd they let him go? You know, and then they went everywhere else they went, they weren't successful. So they know what they're doing in San Antonio when they let players go. As far as Portland, Kim Hughes was fired because the day after the general manager had a media session where he said that, oh, they would definitely think bringing Aldridge back. Kim Hughes in the interview said that LaMarcus Aldridge was gone. This was about 2 days before the Aldridge signing. So that's why he was fired, because he basically went out there and told the truth after the general manager had lied. Portland is not a place where you can become a star. Portland is not a place where, listen, Clyde Drexler was a Hall of Famer's Hall of Famer, and there were a lot of years that people forgot he was in even in the NBA because he played in Portland. People don't stay up late to watch the Blazers. If you are a young player and you want to make a name for yourself and you want to, you know, be on all-star teams and have your name put in certain conversations, Portland is not the place to be. Socially, Portland is not the greatest place in the world for a young, rich black man. It's just not. So there's a lot of reasons for guys to leave Portland. Damian Lillard is a guy who fits with Portland, that environment, that community. That's where he wants to be. If you look at where he came from, that's kind of a perfect fit for him. I think Portland realized that they weren't going to win a championship with the cast they had. They'd gone as far as they could, and they quietly blew it up. They did it without a lot of fanfare. They did it without, you know, making pronouncements, but they blew it up, and they kept the one guy who wanted to be there. You know, Robin Lopez really didn't want to be there if Aldridge wasn't there. Batum, same. So you know what? The Blazers blew it up, kept Damian Lillard. They'll still pack that road. Well, they call it something different, but I thought it's going to be the Rose Garden to me. The fans are still going to come because they have a marquee player, and that's what Portland does. If you look at the history of the Blazers, this is what they do. They have a good team for about 3 to 5 years, and then they quietly blow it up and start over. And most of the guys, when they leave somewhat in their prime. But that's what they do in Portland. This is what they've done. This franchise has done since its inception almost. So this is nothing new for the Blazers. This is nothing new. It's business as usual. This is what happens when you play for the Portland Trail Blazers. You stay there long enough to get really good, and you get close to your prime, and then you go somewhere else.
Okay, we do have a caller in queue, calling from the 540 area code. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Yo, what's up, man? It's your boy, Stairs at the Building. Pleasure to be here with you all. Calling from a girlfriend phone right past my phone. Dr. Fishman, what's up, man? How we doing?
Wow, he calling in from a different. He's sneaking into the kitchen, Sports City. This is crazy. Okay, so now we you see somebody leave Texas, and now we got another problem coming into Texas. So you have a problem, Houston. Your thoughts on the signing of LaMarcus Aldridge?
Honestly, man, like everybody said, I think it's a good fit for him. It's going to be frustrating, you know, as a Houston Rockets fan to deal with LaMarcus Aldridge. More times than, you know, we dealt with some of the Portland Trail Blazers, but again, you know, taking my fan, you know, isn't out of the equation right here. I think that was the best fit for him. Again, everybody alluded to it while I'm sitting here in queue, so for the sake of time, I'm going to keep it moving. But, you know, I was shocked when it happened, you know, when the Lakers situation kind of, you know, fizzled out the way it did. You know, there was only one team really that, you know, was, you know, prevalent in the LaMarcus Aldridge signing, and he ended up landing San Antonio first. So at the end of the day, man, I thought it was a good performance. Going to suck as a Rockets fan having to deal with him 8 times a year. But it is what it is.
at the end of the day, I really want to see how people feel. And this is kind of like an open board situation and everybody here in the kitchen. Why don't people really want to go play with Kobe? Or is it not Kobe? Is it the Lakers situation? I mean, an interesting situation that pops out of this one, Chandler. You're going to love this one. Here goes something interesting for you, too. Jim Buss said that if he sees another unsuccessful season with the Lakers, he will step down. So I think this puts Jeannie Buss back into play, though, too. So, Chandler, I know this is something that we've spoken on throughout the kitchen, whether it was the cafe here on the brunch Monday night, however we approach it. I know that you have been one of the biggest Jim Buss supporters because you love the guy so much, but what's going on in L.A.? Why won't anybody really go to the Lakers, whether it's a Kobe Bryant situation, if it's Kupchak, if it's the Buss family? I'll start with you first, Chandler.
It's because of Jim Buss, and he has two seasons. He made an agreement with Jeannie that if he hadn't turned his team around 5 years, and we're 3 years in, this is going to be the third year, that he would step down. So he has two seasons left. And Jeannie reiterated that in an interview the other day, that, yeah, because Jeannie is actually the managing partner. She has the ability to fire her brother. And they have an agreement in place where if he doesn't get this team turned around in the next two seasons, well, three if you count this coming season, he's stepping down. That's part of why people don't want to go to L.A. right now, because of Jim Buss. I don't know if it's so much Kobe as it is that I think people look at that organization and they see instability. They don't see a lot of ability to win. And if you're going to go to L.A. and face all that pressure and everything else, you at least want to know that you have a shot to win. And right now the Lakers at best are an 8th seed. They're at best an 8th seed. So if you're a guy in his prime and you're looking at a team saying, I want to fight for a championship, the Lakers are not the destination right now. And so, and a lot of these players honestly aren't built for that particular pressure cooker. They're not built for it. You got to remember that a lot of these young players now are coming out of these situations where they really haven't had to fight and scratch and claw, and they haven't been through the pressure cooker. Like LeBron was being covered in high school, okay? He was forged in high school with all of the media pitching in the scrutiny. Look at these guys that are coming out. How many of them really even went through what LeBron went through in high school? Very few of them. So there's very few players that are built for that market anymore. Very few. It's going to take a special kind of cat to want to go to L.A. and want to take on that mantle. And you can say what you want about, oh, the Lakers brand isn't what it is. Listen, it's the L.A. Lakers. It's Wilt. It's Kareem. It's Magic. It's Silk Wilkes. It's George Mikan. It's Pat Riley. It's Showtime. It's Jack Nicholson. It's stars sitting on the sideline. It's L.A. Mm-hmm. Okay, there is still a lot that guys have to deal with when they go to that particular market, and the most guys aren't built for it. I don't know if it's so much Kobe. Some of it is Kobe. Yeah, you got these touchy-feely guys who don't want to be yelled at by other players, and they don't want somebody to try to ride them and make them get their game better because they're so used to people patting them on the back and saying, oh, you're fine. And that's part of it. And to me, that's inherently soft, but that's my own opinion. But I think it more so has to do with the instability in the front office. And by the way, the Roy Hibbert signing is going to turn out to be the best signing the Lakers have made in years.
Wow. Really? Really?
I agree.
Really?
Really? I mean.
Okay,
I'm not
so we. We have a Hoya sighting. Well, we've been seeing a lot of Hoya sightings, so this is beautiful. Brian, your situation or your thoughts on this is your team here. Your thoughts on the Lakers? Jim Buss actually stating if he can't turn this thing around, like Chandler alluded to, that he will end up walking away. And if this opens the door for Jeannie Buss, and why can't this Lakers organization pull people in like they once were able to? I want to say the early 2000s, comparable to now, 2015.
Well, I will give Chandler a lot of credit. I think he hit on a lot of the major pieces. Number one, it's instability. I mean, let's be honest. As he said, you have a first-time exec running the show who didn't work his way to this position, but was kind of gifted it or handed it, if you will. Many Laker fans and knowledgeable basketball fans would tell you, we would feel more comfortable with Jeannie being the basketball decision maker. She's probably more well versed in basketball knowledge than Jerry is, and not for nothing. But there was also a mutual feeling that if she would have been the one in ultimate control, that Phil would be here right now. And I know he hasn't done a you know, by the quote unquote media, that he hasn't done a fabulous job, but you know, he also didn't have a whole lot to work with going in there, so you know, we'll give him another year or so. But I agree with what Chandler said. I think a lot of it comes down to, number one, the competitive balance in the NBA is vastly different than it once was. You don't have, you know, this isn't like baseball, you know, the Yankee situation where you say, you know what, player A is really good. We like him a lot. I think we're going to give him, you know, $7 million. And the Yankees come in and go, you know what, he's probably worth $7 million, but he's worth $15 a year to us just to take him away from this team, which is pretty much what they do. They overpay just about every player because they realize that that's what they need to do in order. I mean, they basically use, you know, up until the last couple years, they basically have used Major League Baseball as their farm system. And so you don't really see that in the NBA, especially the last couple years. It's becoming more and more competitively balanced. You look at a guy like Kevin Durant, perfect example. One of the biggest faces in the game, as you know, Ty, and he has one of three of the largest sponsorship deals in the NBA. 10 years ago, if you were in a small market, like Chandler alluded to with Clyde Drexler, you were almost an afterthought. You did not always get the prime time big deals for sponsorships, which is really where a lot of their money comes from, the NBA players. And so that is a large part of it, is the fact that you can be an NBA star and you know, and play for the Pelicans, New Orleans, and play for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and play for some of these small market teams, and still, you know, with the, you know, with the advent of worldwide coverage, with the advent of the internet, you can still build your brand. So with that said, I think players are going to go to a situation that fits them. You know, and I think the biggest thing right now with the Lakers is A, instability, but B, they've got a lot of really nice young pieces. But you know what? We've all talked about what potential can do. Potential gets people fired. And you know, I know you say that quite a bit, Chandler. Russell's a great-looking point guard. He's excellent on the pick and roll, which is the reason why I thought, oh, maybe DeAndre will stay in L.A., and maybe, you know, maybe he would consider that. But he's excellent at the pick and roll. Clarkson was in the top five in almost every statistical category last year for rookie guards. And then you have Julius Randle, who, you know, when healthy, he was a lottery pick. When healthy, if he can live up to the same expectations he had coming out, he's a tenacious rebounder, he's a great defender, and he's great on the low block. So, I mean, you've got three really good starting pieces if you're the Laker, if the quote-unquote potential works out. But if you're a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge that's in year 10, you're not really looking for potential. You're looking for a finished product. You're looking for a car that's built, and all you have to be is the key to get in and drive. And when you look at the situation in San Antonio, very little turnover. Greg Popovich, if I'm not mistaken, guys, is the longest tenured head coach. So you know you got stability there. You know you have a guy that gets it, that's going to rest you and not drive you into the ground for 82 games a year. You've got great pieces around you, as we've already talked about. it makes sense, and that's what the Lakers need to get back to, and that's what the Knicks and all these big market teams need to get back to, is respectability. They have to show, number one, in today's NBA, that they can draft. And you know what? I give a lot of kudos to the Lakers. If you look over the last couple of years, they've hit on a lot of second-round picks. And so, they've done pretty well in that department. But after you hit on the pick, you have to develop the pick. And that's where I'm a little bit more skeptical. So, you know, when you look at big market teams, you know, the Knicks, the Lakers, because these are two of the teams that are really struggling right now, it all comes down to developing in-house players so that you become more attractive to free agent. Because I really don't think it comes down to just strictly the pressure. You know, hey, I can go play in Milwaukee and make the same amount and not have the pressure or expectation. I think it comes down to when you look at the Knicks and the Lakers roster, and I think Chandler was being nice saying an 8 seed, I don't think either one of these teams are going to be ultra competitive this year. And, you know, maybe the Knicks may be a little more so in the East, you know, because when you look at their 7th, 8 seed, you can have a losing record and still make the playoffs. But, I mean, we're talking about a team in Oklahoma City last year that missed the playoffs that had, what, 50 wins? So, I mean, the Lakers are on the right track. If you can develop these pieces that we've talked about, I think there's a potential that in 2016 that you could see bigger name free agents come to be, you know. And I think it's also scary for players when they see, you know, head coaches that are in their first year, second year, that, you know, don't have a long tenure and they're coming off a losing season. Because let's be honest, in the NBA, you know, before, you know, you may have had 4 or 5 years to kind of right the ship. We've seen plenty of times nowadays where you only get 2, maybe 3 years and then you're out.
Okay, not for your thoughts on this situation, knowing that you're a big L.A. Lakers fan and supporter out there. your thoughts on what's going on in L.A.? Do you agree with Chandler? You agree with Brian? Why they can't really pull in the big names? Are they waiting for Kobe to leave? If it's a Mitch Kupchak situation, if it's a Buzz family situation, your thoughts?
I think we all know that in this NBA, you need 2 superstars. I think the fact that Kobe has been injured and consistently injured, that's the big thing. If you wanted LaMarcus to come in, you'd want to have a Kobe healthy going into a good year with these, you know, pieces with potential, because you get 2 all-stars in there and they can turn that potential into wins and grow that potential in a season. And I really do think even in the West, they could have, persuaded someone. I think the fact that they have not been winning, the fact that Kobe is injured consistently, you're never going to see a full season from Kobe again, that is just scaring people away. So it's just that they're waiting for, you know, I guess the total rehaul for Kobe to be gone, coaches to be gone, Jeannie to be in where she needs to be, and everything to be, you know, the ship to be right for them to get big stars again. Until that time, we'll just see, you know, injured Kobe and 16-win seasons.
No, don't let it be that bad. I mean, I do want to see the Lakers struggle, but they can't continue to see seasons like that. And I think they'll be on a rebuild right now while they get Julius Randle back and D'Angelo Russell will be an interesting point guard. But there are some doubts to, you know, how healthy this team could remain while the Lakers are, you know, trying to hurry up to get successful. I don't know, but this is a work in progress. I have more basketball news. I had the Rajon Rondo situation. He signed a 1-year deal with the Kings. I really want to call him, instead of the Sacramento Kings, I want to call him the Kentucky Kings, because now you got DeMarcus and you also got Willie Cauley signed there. At least 3 pieces of that starting 5 are Kentucky Wildcats. Irvin Santana to start for the Minnesota Twins today after an 80-game ban. This is big for the Twins, but he's going up against a very hot Kansas City Royals team. I want to see how this guy pans out, but I did want to save this last portion of the show for the ladies, the USA women's team in this World Cup. Do they bring this home or what? I want to see how you guys feel about this. I know that, the percentage for the USA team, whether it was going to go up against England or to go up against Japan, in favor the United States women's soccer team. But anything could happen. I mean, you can still lose a game 1-0 in this soccer situation. Hope Solo and her scoreless situation of not letting up a goal has gone on for quite some time. A lot of things are in the favor of the United States. But can the prior success actually blind them going into this World Cup final? I'll throw this one around the kitchen, Brian. I'll go to you first.
Well, Ty, you know, I've been following the women's World Cup soccer and you know, kind of providing some updates here and there as we went along. And, you know, for those of you that are just completely either A, new to the sport, or B, have not been following this particular Women's World Cup, I think it's completely and utterly fascinating. You have United States, you have Japan. United States was knocked out of the World Cup in 2011 by Japan. Crushed our hopes and dreams. Really thought that we had, when I say we, obviously United States, a team worthy of winning a gold medal. Japan is a super, super technical team, and they ended up pulling it out. They're a great counterattacking team, and they probably have, in most people's opinion, the best pure player in soccer. He's kind of the, you know, Ronaldo of women's soccer, and Aya Miyayama, who is phenomenal. If you haven't watched her, I encourage you guys to watch her today. But the women U.S. soccer team is coming in really high. A couple things that are different from last time, guys, for those of you, you know, just kind of tuning into the sport. Number one, our star, Carrie Lloyd, she is now 23, not 19. She has some experience. Last time was her first World Cup action. She's an unbelievable striker. Wambach, her career is winding down. But I think it's a huge advantage. The Japanese do not have one player over 6 foot, and she's 6'2". And I bring that up because for all of you that, you know, listen and watch soccer, you know, there is a lot of corner kicks, and, you know, headers are a huge way that soccer teams score. So the United States definitely has a huge height advantage there on corner kicks in the middle of the field. And then you look at the defensive line, Ty. You want to talk about defense. We talk about great defenses in the past, you know, in different sports. The United States, a large reason why Hope Solo has this shutout streak is the fact that she just simply doesn't face shots. You look at Sauerbrunn, you look at Johnson, you look at some of those ladies on the back line, and they absolutely have dominated opponents, with three of the opponents having less than five shots in the entire game. So they've really done a remarkable job. Over 500 minutes of scoreless soccer. The last time the U.S. gave up a goal was back on June 8th. So they're riding high right now. They don't want to be overconfident, though. Like I said, Japan is probably the best team in the world at counterattack, so the United States ladies are going to have to stay focused, but I definitely think United States is primed and ready to kind of atone for the mistake made back in 2011 when they end up losing on penalty kicks. We did beat Japan in the Olympics in 2012. So I think we knocked out the best team in the world according to the rankings in Germany 2-0. It's the first time they've ever been defeated 2-0. And I think you're going to see the ladies just continue that streak, and I think they're going to roll over Japan.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on the women's team in the World Cup? Do you think they could bring the title back home to the States?
You know, this matchup is interesting, and I think comparatively speaking from the last match to this match, the roads taken were very different for Japan. Japan had a tough road in last time, and this time they kind of was an easy road. They haven't really beaten anyone, so I'm going to ride with Brian on this one. All signs point to us dominating, although Japan is looking to do something that no other women's team has done before. want to become one of the greatest World Cup teams in history back-to-back. So it's going to be interesting to see our ladies, if they can pull it off, first one since 99. I'm excited. I really do think that we can beat this Japanese team. I think, you know, we've shown that we can, and like Brian said, we've gotten older, we've gotten better. The players are just are better at the top of their game. The shutouts, the way we've done it offensively, defensively, shutting out some of the best teams in the world and beating the best team in the world and shutting them out in Germany. We're ready for this team, and I think, you know, USA, we win. U.S. women teams win.
Okay, Chandler, last but not least on this situation, I kind of want, like, the devil's advocate. What could Japan do to catch the U.S. ladies by surprise to steal this World Cup final?
U.S. ladies are peaking now because their offense has looked a lot better. And when people say offense is solid, it doesn't mean they're scoring 55 goals a game. It's just chances and things of that nature and shots. They're peaking well, but Japan, you know what? I think this game is going to be a lot tougher than people think. I can see Japan winning this game, and it wouldn't surprise me because I think they, even though they don't have the height, they play a possession style where I think they can just keep the ball. And I don't know if we're able to control the pace of play. I think Japan is going to control the pace of play. And that's how I think they can win, because I don't know if we can beat them at their game. It's kind of, we have to make them play our game. And with Cardi Lloyd and some of the others that they've inserted into the lineup, it's a game more of speed for us. And we have more speed than them. We have more size than them. But if they possess the ball, that negates our speed and our size. And I kind of think that's what's going to happen. You know, I want the U.S. women to win. I'm glad that, you know, some of these so-called mainstream outlets are giving them their due finally and actually talking about them before they got to the championship game. But I'm just worried about this game because I think Japan is going to dictate pace of play. And in that scenario, I think Japan wins.
Hey, Ty.
Yes, sir.
Hey, you know, I do want to just say, and I think Chandler brings up an excellent point. Japan is a very, very good possession team, which is accurate. And I think that I think the other thing they're really, really good at, which I briefly touched on, is counterattack. So we need to be very careful with the way that we attack. If you look at, you know, the formation that we're now using, we only have one attacker forward as opposed to two, and Kari Lloyd, and we now play four people on the back line. So I'm not quite as concerned, because the other thing is if you go back and look at the 2011 team to the team that we now have in 2015, we have tremendous speed on the wings, which is going to cause their defense to have to expand, opening up that field. I do think that Japan is a phenomenal team, but I think we've already played the best women's team that we're going to face in Germany. And if the ladies play the same type of game that they played against Germany, I think the U.S. women's soccer team is by far and away the most complete team on the planet, and they should win.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to lie, since the 4th of July just went down, I only know three letters right now, and that is USA. Hopefully these girls can bring this doggone title back, man. We know what we need to do. Hope, keep doing your thing, man, to shut out you know, the length of how long you've been shutting these girls down. It's pretty epic. The last time a lady goalie was able to do that was the goalie Scurry from the USA team back in the early 2000s, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think it was the 99 team when they won the title back then, but she was doing her thing also. So Hope is actually in front of some history also, if she can actually you know, stop Japan and shut them out also. But hopefully we get this thing done. and ISIS situation. I went all over the board today, baseball, basketball, even soccer, football. Like I said, unfortunate situation. Like this one hurts me daily for both of the guys that I talked about. Well, not Rolando McClain. Rolando, I don't know what you got to do to get out of your own way. But Josh Robinson, an interview we had here in Sports City, and also Jason Pierre-Paul, another interesting interview that we had here. I'm hoping that I get good word back on both of these guys. I'm going to try and keep everybody in the loop, or once we hear more about the situation, Sports City, stay tuned to what we got here in the kitchen. But now for everybody to go out there and enjoy the remainder of the holiday weekend or what we have left here at the Sunday Morning Brunch, I need plugs, closeouts from all three of you, so we can shut down this brunch the right way. I'll start with you first, Nacho. Thank you for stopping at the brunch. Give us anything that you like to promote, plug, or close out with as we leave the kitchen today.
You know, at Nacho in the Box, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You know, just like, thanks for letting me come on. Another great brunch, another great Sunday going by out here in the West Coast, living it up. Early morning, get the rest of the day going. Thanks, Chandler, Brian, Todd. Thanks for letting me come on. I'll voice my opinion and say what I got to say.
Definitely, that's for sure. Stay tuned. You'll hear more from Mr. Silva throughout this kitchen, throughout this week also. Mr. Hughes, I need a plug. Close out anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here at the kitchen.
SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the player interviews, the blogs, the website for additional information, also the schedule for our upcoming shows. I just want to say, go USA for the women's soccer team, national team. And me and Chandler actually agree on something. I do think Roy Hibbert is going to be a great addition for the Lakers.
Look at that. They all want Hoya help. This is crazy. This is crazy. First Iverson, go save Philly now. Look. I love it. And Greg Monroe in Milwaukee. We'll say that. Y'all got to come around for the cafe for that. We got more talk to go out throughout the NBA, that's for sure. But the Hibbert deal, I just want to see how it works with him and Kobe, because you know those games where Hibbert is off. I want to see if Kobe ends up getting in his face, because you know Kobe don't play that mess. Last but not least, Mr. Knight, I need a plug, close out anything that you like to promote as we shut down the brunch.
Well, Doc Rivers, don't do a sign and trade with Dallas. If DeAndre wants to leave, you make Dallas play the cap space and destroy their team. You don't help your ex move out. Okay, you make her rent the U-Haul. You don't help her move into with the next dude. All right. So all these people talking about that the Clippers need to move on. Listen, I'm not moving on to nothing. You want to leave me? Carry your stuff out yourself. Don't help Dallas. Make them do a sign and trade. Outside of that, Kyle O'Quinn, welcome to the Knicks. Derek Williams, you better get your crap together, because I'm going to kill you if you don't.
Yeah.
Not literally kill you. Well, I might. It depends on how mad I get. But Kyle O'Quinn, great signing by the Knicks. I still don't trust you, Phil. I don't care what you do. I still don't trust you. Other than that, man, everybody have a good weekend.
SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. We'll be back here tomorrow, Monday night sport, wrapping things up. And the Armored Champions are back tomorrow, too, as well in the kitchen. Stay tuned. We are here 7 days a week. The boys will be staying busy, getting a lot of stuff jumping back in the kitchen. We got shows coming back also. It's like Brian said, stay tuned. The Gridiron Chefs will be coming back soon. So get ready for your team's division to get discussed, draft moves, so on and so forth. Sports City, we are getting into the thick of things. People think July is a fall off in the kitchen, though we get stronger. And like I said, my thoughts, prayers, and everything, like I'm crunching my forehead right now. Josh Robinson, Jason Pierre-Paul, I hope this isn't the curse of Sports City, but I need you guys to get back healthy, man, because I feel bad for both of you, because I talked to both of you generally. So this is big, man. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. Enjoy your fourth, people, and the post-fourth parties and cookouts that are taking place today. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning. Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this, everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark the Moses and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts, and that's